Hello and welcome to the Learn It All podcast. If you are somebody who really is out there trying to do an amazing job in your life and in your work, you're firing on all cylinders all the time, and maybe you feel like you're being wildly successful, you need to pay attention to this podcast. And that's even true if you feel like you're struggling to achieve your potential and fire on all cylinders, as the expression goes. I'm joined today by Marie-Helene Pelletier. Marie, MH, I think is okay.
Yes, MH is absolutely okay. So great to be here, Darren.
Oh, it's great to have you. Let me let people know a little bit about who you are and the book that we're going to be talking about. So MH is a CEO, leadership psychologist, keynote speaker, executive coach. MH or Dr. P, I think, are things you like to go by. You have an unusual combination of a PhD and an MBA, plus a lot of clinical experience in addition to your expertise working with large organizations. And you have written this terrific book called The Resilience Plan. And I read this book. I don't think I've ever done this before. And it's not a small book, but I read the whole thing in one entire sitting because I couldn't put it down. There was so much great information in it. And I'm not alone in thinking that. I think Inc. and Forbes and other magazines said, what you just told me, can you say again what they said?
Top five book to read for yourself as a leader and have your teams read, which is very much what I had in mind for my readers. So it's very exciting.
Yeah, that's brilliant. Well, congratulations. That's a big deal. And so feel very lucky to have you on this episode.
Lucky to be here.
So MH, can you, I feel like I've known each other, I've known you forever when I call you MH, but okay, good, nice, thank you. Can you tell us a little bit about your story, just how you ended up doing the kind of work that you do, and maybe a little bit of background for writing the book?
Yes, I started as a registered psychologist and doing a number of areas as you do early career, and then gradually everything pointed and brought me into workplace mental health. And so I've worked as an individual contributor and then as a early manager, starting with managing a call center and then managing larger teams, eventually a chief officer overseeing the work of over 3,000 mental health professionals. And then also worked in insurance, leading mental health strategy for group benefits clients. And so after all this, worked on my own, and mostly what I do now are keynote speakers, keynote conversations, executive coaching, and still have a small practice as a psychologist. And because my combined background, like you said, psychology and business, I ended up working a lot with professionals and leaders. And in my work with them, often they would come to me and say, MH, I don't know what my problem is. I've gone through even more demanding times than right now with no problem whatsoever. I am that guy. I am that person. I'm that woman. This is how I do things. This is how people know me. I'm the rock of the team, the rock of the family. I'm like, I go through things. It's part of my personality. Right now, it's not going well. And in this conversation, I've had to find ways to get in. And had I just gone from a, oh, well, you need to take care of your mental health, they would have not come back to see me, I don't think.
Yeah.
It would have been a good idea, but they, that's not where they were. Where they were is using these analogies from leadership, using how we are strategic in a business when we launch a new product or a new service. And my point being, we need to be equally strategic when we look at our resilience here. And that's how I've done this, and then people telling me it's fabulous and I wish I knew this sooner, that then brought me to think, well, maybe I can have a few people know this sooner if I wrote it, put it in the book. That's how the book came up.
That's brilliant. Yeah. And you very much get the sense when you read the book that you brought these two worlds together, and it is a very strategic approach to building resilience. I'm going to ask you to talk about it in just a minute. You know, people think they don't need to work on resilience, but they do. And you have a wonderful story in the beginning of the book to exemplify this. But in terms of bringing these things together and why I think this is such a powerful book is because it's not a simplistic answer. You make it simple. You have a very easy to follow process, but you recognize that this is a process that you need to invest in an ongoing way. I always think of it as like, oh, just eat blueberries and everything will be fine. And everybody wants those answers. You know, you see it all the time in your like news feed. It's like with five simple words, I just got taught an amazing lesson on emotional intelligence. Like you need a strategy. And you need a plan and one that's doable and that you can follow. And if you really do that and you treat yourself almost as your own coach with these tools, you put yourself in a position to develop resilience. And of course, your argument is that that's something you need to start working on today, not in the moment where it's suddenly like, oh my God, I'm so burnt out.
That's right. I mean, it's still... whenever we figure it out, I would say yes, now is better than any time after now. So yes, now. Yeah. And if we have all the options, yes, proactive, always better. The same way being proactive about our physical health is better, proactive about our financial health. Yes, if we can be proactive, even better. So if we're earlier in our careers, and I'm so thrilled because the book is in some university bookstores as well, so that individuals prior to hitting the workplace, prior to starting their business, prior to all these fabulous things that they'll bring to their professional lives, can consider stepping back and learning from the pain that so many others have gone through. Yeah. And having these tools. And you're right, I've made the book, actually, I have made it on the concise side. Business books are getting even more concise right now. That is where everyone's brains wants to go. And so, which makes it even harder, as we know, writing something short is actually more work. However, yes, it is concise so that the reading of it is doable and the exercises are doable as well, 5-10 minutes.
Yeah. You have, at the risk of giving away the opening, you have this great story in the beginning, and I was hoping you could tell about crossing this river. And this was you took this as a lesson for like why you need to build that resilience ahead of time. Would you share that story with
listeners? Yes, that story. What happened? So me and my husband really like mountaineering, longer treks, like multi-day things. And so this one was an 8-day traverse. So you get in somewhere, you get out 8 days later in the Canadian Rockies. And it was late June of a year that had received a lot of snow. So we were going to be unpacked snow for most of this. And without going through the whole story, what happened is on day one, we ended up crossing a river. And because it is a wild traverse, we had to like go in the river to cross it. But we're day one, we're fresh, we're full of energy, we're fully aware of everything, and we are implementing all the things, we're checking with each other, plan A, plan B, like all the things. And we cross successfully, great. And then for all kinds of reasons, the traverse needed to be redirected. And you have to read the story to learn more. But the point of it is we found ourselves back at that river at day 8. And it was the same river, technically. However, it was actually much bigger because all that snow, that packed snow in late June, had melted because it was like very sunny, very warm. But because this second time we were exhausted, we had gone through now 8 days of multi hours a day, you know, very demanding days. We were exhausted. And so we basically did not do any of the things that we did on day one. And then the context had changed. The river was also bigger. Point is, I almost died, basically drawn into the river. Nick was able to save me. I survived. I'm here. The point with this, though, is after that, I had a lesson specific to this particular endeavor, but also from a broader perspective, realized how this is what happens to all of us, individual contributors, leaders, managers of any level. What tends to happen is we're pretty good at the equivalent of day one. We are fresh, paying attention, using our resources, doing all the things, and we are good. We're resilient. Ha, wonderful. And so no problem there. That's really good. The challenge usually happens when we are at the equivalent of what I call day 8, where more demands are going on. So work demands are through the roof, and often personal demands will also go through the roof at the same time. Things are happening. Best friends quitting their relationship of 5 years. They need support. Parents, other people around you. It all happens at the same time. We are trying to meet all of those demands. We let go of the things that would have protected us. We're not going for a walk that night because we don't have time. We're working late. We're not sleeping well. All the things. And then that's when the resilience erodes, becomes very at risk. And so if we have a strategic resilience plan, if we've thought of this in advance, if we've looked at our context, the kinds of demands we will likely face, the kinds of forces around us that may impact our resilience, then we can actually make a plan that we will know in advance, so it's more likely to stay even in high demand times. And then we'll be able to continue to stay resilient and bring our best self, both to the professional and the personal side.
Yeah, that's great. I think that's such a big deal for people, because it's, you had a plan. I'm going with the metaphor again. You had a plan to cross that river that worked great on day one. And because it worked great on day one, you don't even think about it anymore. You think you're good and you just march through your life. But that plan actually was not up to day eight. And that's so true of the plans that we might make, even if we've already done some work. And you know, a lot of times it's like, well, I'm here because I managed, you know, to be resilient enough to be here in the first place. So it must be okay. But that's probably not right. And when it sneaks up on you, you're not going to be ready for it, which is why having a technique, a plan to fall back on, and very specifically one that's flexible enough to react to the context of the situation that you're in. And that's where I thought your book and your approach was so much better than what you often see, which is these sort of cookie cutter recommendations that, hey, just do this and everything will work out. But it doesn't really tell you how to adjust, make it personal, or adjust when your context changes, which is what you did so beautifully in this book.
And that's so important. And thank you for your comment there. That's exactly what I was hoping to achieve with this conversation, this reflection in the book. Often, one of the things that relates to what you were just talking about is how, yeah, we think we've done this before, so therefore we have a plan, so let's keep going with the plan kind of thing. One of the ways to conceptualize or to think about why do we need a new plan now is that, yeah, you have a plan, but it's based on old data. So in this case, sure, we had a plan for day eight. Yeah, we're going to cross the river kind of thing. But it was based on how we knew that river day one. We had not thought about how things had changed for day eight. And that's also a bit of what happens. Oh, we've been good through these past 3-5 years doing all the things we were doing. I'll keep being like this now. Only now the context is different. If nothing else, you're 5 years older. Yes, even if you're in your 30s, that does make a difference. And it's even more true as we continue through the next few decades. There is something about adult development that, no, the way we react to things, our context generally changes in our 20s, 30s, 40s, and so on.
That's great. Well, we'll get into some of your specific recommendations. Yeah. But I did want to call one thing out, because you actually mentioned this earlier. You have a chapter in here that is neither rock nor wreck. And I think it's, you don't hear this advice very often, but you're specifically telling people, if somebody says, hey, you're my rock, you need to actually change that for yourself. Like that's a problem. Can you say more about neither, like wreck, obviously, you know, hopefully you're not going to be falling apart because you're not resilient anymore. But can you talk about that, neither rock nor wreck?
Yes. And it's meant well, right? When we've been told, oh, you're the rock of the family, you're the rock of the team, you're the rock of the group of friends. It's absolutely meant with love and as a compliment. And we take it as such. We're like, yeah, thanks. Mm-hmm. I am that person. Yeah. But it's not just that. It gets into us. It gets into our belief system. It gets into our identity, how we see ourselves. And as such, it will impact how we think in specific situations, how we feel in these situations, like feeling like we have to take it no matter what, keep going. And then it impacts the behaviors. No, don't need time for myself. I'm supporting others only, and I'm keeping going, and I'm delivering, over-delivering all the things. And so we get to, just adopting that thinking that we're the rock. And so, and we know, obviously, that we're not. We do realize we have a beating heart. We are humans. Okay, fine. But that's not enough. The words do stay in our head. And it's actually not helpful to keep that narrative in our head. It moves us away from the need to look at the continuum, the nuances, the small shifts in how we're feeling that indicate to us that, oh, I'm getting impacted by the level of demands I'm facing, which would allow us early to take action, as opposed to believing I'm a rock, not listening to any of the signs until I'm crashing, can't go to work over here. It happens. So if we are letting go, then becoming more human, that's better. And that's where sometimes I'll say, yes, if you're the main person in your life calls you their rock in a very nice, endearing, lovingly way, my suggestion is to say, darling, I know you mean this well, and I love you too. Can we find another word for me? Because I need to make sure I listen to my humanness. That's part of what makes me a good manager. That's part of what makes me a good person. That's part of who I am, just objectively. So yeah, let's find another word.
That's surprising and valuable advice. Mm-hmm. It doesn't mean that you can't be a good leader. You can't be a good support for other people. In fact, if anything, you could be better because you know how to actually establish some limits for yourself and for others. And that's part of the game that you need to learn to be a so-called rock. Like, we need a different word than rock for somebody.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah. You talk a little bit too, because we mentioned this earlier, and for people to get an understanding of your approach, which you do very nicely in the book, some people, and you acknowledge this, some people will say, well, look, resilience, this isn't a me problem. This is a work problem. Like, it's systemic. And other people say, no, it's not. It's individual. And you say, well, it's both. And we're going to attack it from the point of view of the individual for very practical reasons. And I think I mentioned my wife is a psychotherapist. I know she also thinks both about individuals and systems. Things happen in systems. Can you talk a little bit about how all this fits together in your worldview?
Absolutely. So it is, and more we are thinking, you know, it used to be that if we were talking about burnout, it was very much in the individual, even a weakness, unfortunately, and all that. That is now evolving. Burnout is in the relationship between us and the workplace. It is a system. And therefore, the possible causes are often split, shared, you know, different percentages, 1% Darren, 99% Darren's work environment, or 99% Darren, 1% his environment. Rare. But, you know, it's usually a shared responsibility. And so sometimes people will then think, well, MH, given how, whatever, toxic, unhealthy, whatever the workplace is, or my specific leader is, it's for them to change. Like, we can identify it. I've read a book about it. I've seen it. They're doing all the wrong things. Me, on the other hand, I'm here. I've got my family. I'm doing my thing, you know, and that's, I'm going to wait for them to change because they're the problem. And here's the thing. It will still impact you while you're there, as much as you don't want to, as much as it is unfair, really. But that's the reality. And if we think, and that's, again, it connects with the rock conversation of earlier, you can't override your health. You can't just decide that I'm going to be here in this toxic environment and it's their problem. They have to fix it. I will tough it out because I've worked so much to get here. Like, I'm not quitting. I'm not leaving. I've worked to be in this organization, in this type of role. I finally have it. And they're going to be like this. Well, tough luck. I'm staying here. And it doesn't work. That's how, over time, yes, your mental health may be impacted. And that's what I mean by the price is not the same. If you end up burning out because you were so firm on they need to change, and you're probably right, However, your error is to think it that it will not impact you. It will impact you. And my point is, your price is going to be much higher than the price for the organization if you get off on sick leave because you're burnt out. As important and fabulous as you are, the workplace will figure itself out. There will be other people. It may not be the same as you, whatever, but they're not going to go bankrupt because of this. They will. That's what they have, entire teams of HR people doing exactly this. You, on the other hand, is your life. Like 100% of who you are right now needs to be off work, recovering from the impacts of this burnout, making decisions about what you're going to do next, returning to this workplace or not or whatever. But like the impact is much bigger. So what I'm saying is, if this is the situation, make sure you're building your resilience as high as you can so that you can decide with visibility on what you're going to do and how long and with which resources.
That's great. So I'm going to keep saying that every time I get a turn to speak. The first thing I say is, it's great. Okay. So you've got me bought in. You're talking, you've convinced me that I can't just be endlessly resourceful and resilient and like, well, I'm special, I'll just work it out. And I can't hang my identity around being other people's rock all the time, or I'm really going to set myself up for failure. And I also can't just rely on the workplace to manage my mental health and burnout for me, because the cost is asymmetric. I'm going to pay a much higher price than they are. So I'm bought in. And this is the point where I feel like a lot of other books that I've read now trot out very familiar advice without much extra. Now, you do acknowledge that the advice, the researched things that you can do to feel better, they're known. We know what they are. But of course, the problem is just knowing it and trying to do it. Even if you do it, you still don't see the results that you want to get. So can you walk us through, like, what are those things that we kind of know are going to make us more well? And then just start to get into your approach for how we make this more than just those New Year's resolutions that we don't do, or we do and feel like they don't work and we give up.
I know. We've all been there, really, about so many things. Yeah. And in the show notes, I'll send you, Darren, a link to worksheets that are free. They're on my website. You don't even have to have the book to use them. They're so self-explanatory. So if you feel like, you know, just playing around with these exercises, that'll be very easy to do. So first, yes, the pieces we know from research, and I will say this often, if I am with an audience, I say, okay, so let's list these things, and they will get there. It's very easy, but just to save time, we're looking at exercise, yes, three types: cardio, strength training, meditative type activity like meditation, yoga, tai chi, all of these beautiful things. Second category, they're not in that order, I'm just naming them that way, but would be nutrition. Very direct impact on our resilience and psychological health. We tend to think it's just physical. Absolutely not. Strong, strong impact. And we'll see even more of this from the research in the next few years. Sleep, we do want 7 to 8 hours. And then spending time in relationships with people with whom we enjoy spending time with. And there are others: time in nature, volunteer work, if you're spiritual, investing in your spirituality, many others as well. So we know what the things are. We usually trust the research. It would be great if we had them. We don't have them because the schedule is full or overflowing. So it's hard. So what I'm saying is, we need to be strategic. And here's the parallel, right? So in a business, if we were, you and I, Darren, we're in a business together and we just had a great idea for a new product, would we just say, oh, we have a great idea, a new product, let's launch it? Or would we say, we have a great idea for your next product, let's see how this connects with our values as an organization, where we're going, how we want to be known for in the market, who else is offering anything close to this, who's buying it, how much are they paying for it, what forces in the future might impact the demand for this? We would do the whole thing. So we would be looking at the values, the forces, the context. And what I'm saying is, let's do the same thing here when looking at our resilience. And so what I'm saying at a high level, and we can dive into any aspects of this, is let's step back and look at our individual values. let's look at our actual, and I really underline bold italics, actual context is, we can talk more about it, because we tend to underestimate the demands and overestimate the supply, which means it's not actual. We should look at the context, the forces around us that are just there, so that we create a plan that is not just what research says, but it's sure we want to listen to research and we want to translate this in a way that's realistic in your context today. So your context today allows for this kind of plan. Your context in 3 months from now may need to change. And that's great. We just adapt the strategy.
Yeah, I like that you have the plan B and like different, because like you said, on day eight, things could be different. And sometimes day eight is going to be totally different than you ever even guessed. And you need to have a plan that you can update, because sometimes you go through cycles where you are actually way busier than you normally are. I mean, I think that tends to be like, we're just always saying that, but there can be real periods where you might be under a particular kind of stress and your plan needs to be able to adjust.
Absolutely.
Because what happens otherwise is people like try something and then one time, like you actually say you need a flexible plan. And I think a lot of people don't understand that. They think, if I'm going to make a new habit, I have to do it exactly the same every single day, or it won't work. But you kind of say the opposite.
Well, I say combination. And that's what actually research says also. So it's still true that the more we can create, on habits specifically, the more we can create some form of stability of removing a decision point from our brain, the better. So I don't need to think about it. Every morning I do 5 minutes of deep breathing, for example, or doing my stretches or whatever you decide. You remove the decision point and it makes the habit stick and easier to stick. So there is all kinds of good reasons to have that stability. And it used to be that research was only about this, saying you need to stick and that's the way to win. Research has continued, of course, and now is adding the yes and. You need flexibility. So people who were a bit flexible on, yes, I'm going, say, to the gym 3 times a week for half an hour, and we're saying, and if for whatever reason I cannot do a certain day at the gym for half an hour, I will go into the gym and only do 10 minutes and come back. Or if I cannot do this because I'm traveling for work, I will be walking to the gate that is the furthest away from mine at least 3 times before I sit down. Whatever, you've transformed it in ways that you are maintaining the habit in a different version of it. And that does a number of things. It maintains the habit, yes. It also contributes to building your sense of self-efficacy, that belief that you can influence this, because you see yourself doing it. And the beauty with this, it's similar to people who do big physical challenges, triathlons and all kinds of things. Part of what they do when they do this is they build their sense of self-efficacy. Yes, in the particular task they're doing, the triathlon, say, but it's also, it expands, because then you build your belief you could do tough things in other areas and in the future, and you're building agency when you do this. So it goes in all kinds of very positive directions. But yes, point is, having flexibility with your plan is key.
Is a big deal. So if I review a little bit, we've got the idea that we need to make, because I like your business analogy, although I think there are a lot of businesses that should follow the steps that don't. But let's just go ahead with this idea. Like, absolutely, does this match our brand? Does this match our values? Is this how we, should we be positioning ourselves in the marketplace around this? So when you talk about values, connecting the new behaviors that you want to build, you talk about both connecting it to your values, and you use a broad definition of values. And you also talk about having a very clear goal as you go through these worksheets in the process, which is, it's not everything, because you can put so many things in here. It's about what's going to help you build resilience specifically.
That's right. Yes.
Can you talk a little bit about what do you mean by values? Because you have that broad definition for it. So as people are sort of marching through this process.
Correct. Made it a bit broad, because the idea behind taking a moment to reflect on what I call your values here is, different people will have different language around this. connecting with my purpose, what's meaningful for me, my why, however you want to call this, but it connects with what makes you very unique. And that's critical, because then we're moving away from the list of things we should all be doing would be great, blah, blah, blah. And now we're connecting it to, yeah, but what's most important for Darren specifically? And in fact, that's how I define values here. I say you could use values as in formal values, like I value integrity, for example. I value, you know, but you could also just put there what's just most important for you in life. If nature and mountains are important for you, they go on the list. And so what that creates, and I often encourage people to have a bit of volume there, like, you know, at least 10, 15 words that come to mind, so you can have even more clarity. You have some, obviously. Most people have a few ideas of the first top three or something like this. But if you sit down and really aim at 10 or 15, you're going to sit there a bit longer and you'll find ingredients that may be smaller, just like when you do a recipe and you have vanilla. There's not a lot of vanilla, but it makes a great, nice, big difference if you like vanilla. I do. Yeah. I always usually double the amount. But the point is, if you go with a longer list, you will find smaller ingredients that are also still very important for you. And that's a, I think, core, critical first step to look at your values for that reason, because it will connect with what speaks to you.
It's a little bit like that thing about gratitude. Sometimes do this exercise with people where they talk about what they're grateful for. And they always start with the things that they are genuinely grateful for, but they're things, you know, like my family and my health and stuff. And but if you make them keep going, it's like, oh, I'm grateful for the light bulb that I can, that I actually walk. You get to, it's actually, there's a lot of value in going down the path to even just small unexpected things. And not just, it kind of surprises you into appreciating things in a fresh way. So that reminds me of similarly.
It's so true. Anytime we stay a bit longer in the reflection, we're going to find more. And the more that we find is often the gems, the colors, the nuances that get us to something even more unique. So I think that's what you see in this exercise on gratitude. And I think you're right. That's a bit of how you get to a deeper degree of richness. If you take that time, which again, I'm not talking about hours. We're talking about just stay there 10 minutes as opposed to 30 seconds.
Yeah.
And you'll get it. Like I often say, seriously, this book, you could read in a, you know, from one coast to the other type flight. If you're staying on it, you'll get through the book and be able to actually do the exercises and get out with your plan.
Yeah. So I'm looking at my resilience plan now. And a couple of the things that I think would be good for the listeners to hear is you talk about you got your priority values list. You also talk about the supply demands inventory. Again, we're sort of bringing business in and just thinking of it in this very practical way about supply and demand when it comes with your energy levels and your resilience. And then you talk about the quadrants of context. And you use all this to build a very simple pillars formula. Can you walk people through that just a little bit?
Yes. So high level, we do our list of values that we were talking about. That reflection on sources of supply and demand, again, distilled it to something very doable, practical, table, two columns, demands column, supply column. You're listing what's in your context there. And I guide you through making sure we catch your blind spots, where you're going to disregard or overstate or whatever, very realistic in the current context. And then the third tool that I've brought forward just to help us make sure we see the overall current context is it's a version of a SWOT analysis. In business, we would do a SWOT, meaning we're looking at strength. So for S, W for weaknesses in the internal context of a business. And in the external context of a business, we would be looking at the opportunities and the threats in the environment. So I've translated this for us as individual. So for you, Darren, currently, what are your just natural personality strengths that are helping with your resilience? Let's say you're interested in it. So it's natural. It's easy. You're that guy. Okay.
Yeah.
And weakness. Maybe you get interested in so many things that you say yes to everything. It's becoming a challenge.
Yeah.
So And then on the external side, what types of opportunities do you have? Well, you actually live in an area where you could easily step out and go for a walk if you wanted to, as opposed to having to drive or take transit. And maybe a challenge in your current context is that you actually receive more demands than is actually possible, and you're not clear yet on how to, you know, which ones to say yes to or no, so you're stuck. That would be an example. But you're doing that analysis with more than one example in each quadrant, but it gives you, you can see, right, even now as we start saying this, we get a better sense. And I even invented all this, everyone. I did not ask Darren in advance. So just,
yes,
you know.
Yeah, yeah. Pretty close, but still. Yeah.
But, well, I picked these because, yeah, many people I work with also and myself have experience. But once you have this, then you can identify three directions that would be logical, that would make sense for you to invest in. And then I usually say three because we don't want more than 3 to 5 pillars usually in a strategy, and then actions for each of them. And that's it.
That's great. And that is, again, one of the things that's so nice here is that, I mean, it's elegance, you know, right? Anytime you develop a formula that's good, you want it to be kind of E equals MC squared, and that there should be kind of a simplicity and an elegance to it. So this does have that. But you also... And I just to be clear, when you talk about supply and demand, you're talking about essentially like how resourced am I, or versus how many demands are on my time and my knowledge and things.
Correct.
Right?
Yes. Very much looking at not just the work ones, not just the ones you don't want to have, like, you know, the big picture. So that, you know, because the overachievers will minimize how many demands they have. They'll say, oh, yeah, well, that, of course, that doesn't count. Of course, I'm going to help my friend who's leaving a relationship. Yeah. It goes on the list.
Yeah.
And then on the supply side, they'll say, oh, yeah, I'm that person. I go for walks with my partner 5 times a week. Great. How many times last week? Oh, well, last week things happened. We didn't go.
Yeah.
Oh, well, it doesn't go on the list then.
Yeah. You even talk about how the demand can be something is like really great. Like you're seeing a bunch of friends, like you like to see people and you're seeing a bunch of people all the time. I, you know, going away with my family or something like that, the big extended family, but that can be a demand too, because you're not if it's not giving you enough time to sleep, then you're paying a penalty right there. You need like the full recharge. And I think we just forget that we need those things.
We do. And it does connect with the need to have flexibility in our plan, sometimes even two versions of the same plan. Like for many people, there will be, hopefully, these days or maybe in a few months, a vacation. Vacation is a different context. We can't just say, oh, well, it's vacation, so of course, everything's going to be fantastic and I'll come back refreshed. Hello. We've all been there, coming back wishing to work because work will be more relaxing than whatever that vacation was. And so... But thinking in advance about what that context looks like and thinking, okay, if we do all these activities every day, it's positive, exciting, goes well, that's great. And I'm feeling my battery is very low these days. So if I'm doing this for those 6 days that we'll be away, I'm not going to come back refreshed, even though they're fabulous. And I'm in, you know, in this wonderful place that you've not been before, that you want to see as much as you can of it. It's not the only goal. You also have the goal to come back refreshed. So let's adapt, right?
Yeah. Can you walk us through like what a resilience plan might look like when you get down to what those pillars are?
Yes.
And then especially how does that sort of process of iterating it and being flexible with it, like what might that look like?
Yes. So, and of course, each plan will be individual for each person. I'll give you examples based on individuals that I've worked with, that kind of thing. For many, as they've explored their values, they've realized relationships were very important for them. For many, they've realized they are facing lots of demands, putting lots of their time in all kinds of places. The value relationship would serve as a source of supply, but it's not there because they're working or they're not there. And then looking at their context where the demands are so large that it's making it difficult for them to implement things they would want to. So sometimes this kind of, I'm skimming very quickly over how that could look like. But then if we're looking at, say, three potential pillars, it may be that one pillar is going to be called relationships. It may be that another pillar will be called boundaries. It may be that another pillar is going to be called assessing time better. And because they've realized on that third one, for example, that they tend to underestimate how long anything is going to take. So they are either late or they are still on time, but they've created an amount of pressure in themselves to make it that is just so demanding and stressful for themselves. So maybe there will be one action on that third pillar, which is, yeah, at least once a week when I'm about to do something, I think this is going to be a 10-minute thing, start the timer and see how long that was actually. And then you'll realize this is actually a half an hour thing. Isn't that interesting? Next time I plan, I'm not going to think that this is 10 minutes and think I have time for lunch, because this is half an hour. That's the time I had for lunch, and now I'm not eating. Nah, doesn't help. On the pillar and where we call it boundaries, for example, maybe, yes, I'm wanting to be very responsive to my team, and I value relationships. And I've noticed that when a family member calls me, or I'm in interaction with family member and work calls me outside of work hours, and I'm not, say, on call for crisis, but they're just calling me, I tend to pick up, could I experiment with the behavior, unless it is the expectation, and there's a different solution to this. But if it is not the expectation that you could listen to the voicemail in 5 minutes, we stay here, we're not interrupting with answering the phone. We appropriately, after a while, say, I'm going to just need to check that message. Now what we've done is we've aligned my actions with my value, right? So that's an example of a good boundary. And on the relationship front, it depends on each person's individual context, for example, but I don't know, is there an opportunity that if you're working from home, not in a Zoom meeting or a podcast with Darren, and so therefore your door is open or, you know, cracked open and a family member comes in, can we, I don't know, get into the habit of standing up and stepping outside of the office to have that few minutes conversation, as opposed to fingers still on the computer, hello, you know, having a conversation. Yeah, yeah. If we value the family, that kind of action tells them they're number one, gives you the context to be fully focused, as opposed to corner of your eye still seeing what's coming through here. Yeah. And you've aligned your behavior with your values. So simple. See, none of these things take a lot of time. They are aligned and create your plan.
That is one of the things I really appreciate. And I think people don't fully understand. A lot of these actions are quick. I mean, you have some actions in there that are literally like a 30-second action. Yeah. And I think people even don't realize often, you know, I'm going to start running. And I'm just going to only run, you know, half a mile, and you get out there the first day, I feel great. And you run 2 miles. You're actually kind of hurting your plan by doing that. You want to build things in small chunks and let it be a small chunk and start to realize the power of those small actions and how they can add up. And it makes it much easier then to also to adjust when suddenly the context for you changes.
Yes. You do want to slow down, that tendency to always do more faster kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
And a way to think of it is that, let's say you've done that first step. It went great. That was easy. You feel good. Great. The reality, if you've done your thinking about your context, is that your days don't look exactly the same every day. Mm-hmm. As you are in a leadership role, especially the junior leadership roles, you're bombarded by demands by your team. All day, every day. That's what you do. It still is to some degree as you progress in different leadership roles, but definitely as an early manager, early leader, that will be very much part of it. So then your task number one is not to do this thing longer or more often. It's to get to a point where you can sustain it no matter what. Yes. That's what you're wanting to do first. So it stays even in the waves of demands that are coming in all day, every day. Now do this first, maintain it for the next few months. And in a few months, evolve your plan, yes. But for right now, just let it be solid while the context goes through its changes.
There's something very empowering about that idea, because I think for many of us, we're just looking, I just have to do all this to get to this level. And then once I get there, I'll figure it out. And you're saying, no, no, no. From the very beginning, build something that's sustainable, that you can maintain. And it doesn't mean that you won't show up and be a star team player and a great collaborator and, you know, whatever that new word for rock is for people that we want to come up with. But you can still be that person, but you want to build in longevity, something you can maintain right from the beginning. And it's a different approach, and it's a less desperate approach. It's kind of a very empowered way to think about things.
Empowered, yes, it's a word people use, and grounded, and people will say that too, freeing others. Yeah. I've seen this as well. Yeah. And you could see it, right? Even talking about it, you're like, yeah, look, you can actually do this. Yeah. If you do this, you will see yourself doing it, which brings us back to our self-efficacy. And yes, that sense that, actually in a context where so many things are changing around us at that various pace, and all kinds of things happening, it's important to make sure we do take the control where we have it. It's in our hands. And so we do want to invest in this.
Yeah. So many other things in the book that we're really just not going to have a chance to talk about. But for example, the power of self-efficacy, developing a mindset that's going to serve you better in those in that moment that you need to be resilient, not just part of the plan. The importance of communicating these changes with other people, because otherwise they'll kind of pull you back to how they know you. And again, like how to really develop that mindset and that approach that will allow you to be your own coach as you go through this whole process, and or actually hire a coach, which you advocate to help you along the way. You know, that's a valuable thing to do.
Any support, you know, sometimes it depends. Again, I would look at what's in your context, in your current environment. For some people, they have a colleague that would be equally interested in touching base on a regular, whatever, monthly, every couple of months basis to check in on how are we sticking to our plan or evolving it. It could be a peer. It could be a mentor that is part of your overall professional network. It could be a spiritual leader. If that's someone who is in your life that you connect with, that can be that person for you. Yes, it could be a coach. But what we want is to surround ourselves, have the equivalent of our board of directors, right? To have our supports so that we can check in as needed, evolve, have conversations when we're stuck. And also, yes, what you mentioned, also informing people around us so that they know what's going on a little bit, but also can support us, hold us accountable even.
MH, because we're friends now, although it turns out everybody calls you MH, but I do know that you like the outdoors. We like to ask people on the show as a signature last question, what is something that people that a lot of people might not know about you, might be surprised to learn about you, that you like or you do or have experience with?
Like many things, I think sometimes a funny thing that I say is I'm a one large project type person. So one PhD, one book, one child is one of my things. So that may be what I would say to this. But yes, no, I do love the outdoors also.
Good.
That's staying. Yeah.
Yeah. Nice. One big project at a time. I can relate to that. I like that idea. So we'll be curious to see what you get interested in next. Maybe you'll be an astronaut. That's next.
Who knows?
Could be. It's a one big project.
Yes, yes. We'll see.
But you'd have to just go, I'll just pick a planet and only go there and just once.
Right? See?
Yeah. That would be your conditions for joining.
It probably would be.
The Canadian NASA. So the book is The Resilience Plan, right?
Yes.
No. Yes. The Resilience Plan. By MH, or as she's known in publications, Marie-Hélène Pelletier. And how can people get in touch with you?
They could go to theresilienceplan.com. That brings you to my book, what I do, everything. Also LinkedIn, always a great place to connect and join on conversations, yours and mine and all this, so that we can broaden the perspectives we take on anything, workplace, mental health, really, and specifically being strategic about our resilience.
Great. Well, it was an absolute privilege to have you on the show. I wish we had another 2 hours. Maybe we can just find an opportunity to do it again sometime. And thank you so much to our listeners. If you enjoyed the show, please like and subscribe. And until next time, stay curious and keep learning. Thanks, everybody.